When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. We've got a great guest today, Ryan.
We do.
He's a friend of mine. Thank you, Kristen Ritter, for the introduction. We just hit it off. We both like, what do you call it? Cornhole.
Cornhole.
We like cornhole. Mm-hmm. And we met at a con through Kristen. And we just hit it off. He's just like a regular dude who's heart of gold, fun, funny. He gets it. And he really opens up this episode. And Skeet, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it, man. It was really nice of you. And yeah, what else can I say? Hey, if you like this episode and you just like Skeet and you've never listened to this, if you enjoy it, all I ask you is subscribe to the show and write a review, follow us. I would appreciate it. It's a little podcast that could. We've been doing this. We talk candidly with celebrities about their personal life, mental health, and other things. And we've grown a nice audience, a loyal audience. And thank you to all my patrons, patreon.com/anxiety, if you want to join and support the podcast. Tons of perks, like getting your name shouted out at the end of every episode, along with packages from me and many other things. You can go to my Instagram, at TheMichaelRosenbaum, and the link tree. There's cameos, there's cons that me and Tom Welling will be at doing Smallville cons, May 21st, May 22nd. Don't forget, live podcast at the Bourbon Room. One is already sold out, the May 22nd event. So get tickets now for the May 21st. We do a Smallville Nights where we do is interactive with the fans, Tom and I, and we read scenes and it's a lot of fun. Everybody goes home with a little gift. And then we do the live pod with Q&A and a bunch of stuff. So do that. Also, I believe if you check the link tree, we're doing our first time ever Smallville Con, and that's in New Jersey. So you want to get tickets to that. We're going to have guest stars and a bunch of people coming to that one. That's going to be fun. And lastly, Rosie's Puppy Fresh Breath. You can see in the link. It's my product that helps your dog's breath, and it really works. Write a review if you like it and support. So I appreciate it. And the Inside You online store. Don't forget, lots of cool merch like Lexmas scripts signed by me, Funko Pops, ship keys, tumblers, all that stuff. Tumblers like these. Anyway, this was a great episode. We should just get into it because right now people are fast forwarding and I hope they don't, but they probably are. It's okay. I love you and thank you for the support. Let's get inside of Skeet Ulrich.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You. Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I'm just waiting.
That's how it went yesterday.
I just went, oh man. Yeah. Well, what Skeet and I were talking about was I did this show that hasn't aired yet and I had to get high. And I don't get high
had
very
to.
Often.
Had
well,
to like,
you, it's no, part
I mean,
of the
right.
show.
It is the show.
It's the show. And so I was, you know, they called me the night before and they sent the script and I go, oh, this is 5 pages of dialogue. I'm not memorizing this shit. I just said flat out, get someone else. And they're like, no, you just have to know the story. So just read it over. And I go, oh, the story. So I kind of looked it over. And then the next morning the producers come in, they go, hey, and they're all really nice. And they sit down and they're like, all right, tell us the story. And I go, all right. And I kind of had the gist of it and they go, okay, I think we'll bring in the guy who's going to give you the weed. And
so that
you know,
was,
we have a medic there. We have someone who's by your side if you need anything, if you need a break.
A medic.
And because I'm thinking, oh shit, man, do people freak out?
I mean, I think I would. Yeah,
well, I don't smoke joints. Yeah. I have not had a hit on a joint in I don't know how long. I've taken taffies. Mm-hmm. But taffies are a mellow. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I was so high, I couldn't even finish a sentence. I'd start a story, and I was really into it, and then all of a sudden I go,
where was I going?
Oh boy, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about. And But they made you feel really comfortable, and there's a bunch of other actors that did it. And I can't believe I did it, but I guess I wanted to get through it so I could just be like, you know, you got through that. You did it.
It was a buddy of yours, though, that does it or not?
Well, my buddy.
Your buddy had done
it. I had done stand-up with, called me and said, would you do the show? And my agent and all this stuff. And I was like,
well, you've done stand-up?
Yeah, yeah. I did it for like a year. And
no
I
was way.
Like, and then I realized I just don't want to go to these small cities and like constantly flying.
Jeez, sorry, like, I already got you on a tangent. You're not even smoking.
I'm not even inside. This is inside of me. Do you now? You get high here and there.
I do. Yeah, yeah. But I'm like a one inhale kind of, and then I'm high, and then I'm like wishing I wasn't, and like.
Yeah. Do you get paranoid?
I start to now in my latter years.
I want you to be comfortable, by
I'm
the
good
way.
Now.
Are you sure you don't want to prop that? Why don't you prop that behind your back?
No, this feels good now.
You like that?
I'm feeling kingly.
It's a good hat.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, I definitely dabble and always have for many, many years. But I've had years I don't. So, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's I don't drink anymore.
Congrats. How do you feel? Honestly, don't lie.
Honestly, no lie. A million times better.
Why? What about you is better?
I think the thing that like you don't realize is how much it affects your hormones, your dopamine, your GABA.
Because it's a depressant, right?
It's a depressant. But it, you know, what it does is it gives you a dopamine spike. And that's why you chase drinks all night. Like you're getting that little elevated feeling and then it starts to dissipate rather quickly. So you grab another one, you get that spike again, and then it starts to fade and you grab another one. And what happens is your body cuts off making its own dopamine because it's getting it's going over its full limit. And so it cuts off its own. And then when that alcohol dopamine wears off rather quickly, you're in the depressant stage because your dopamine's been depleted.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, I guess I'm finding, you know, and I wouldn't have considered myself an alcoholic per se.
How many drinks did you have a week?
Well, that was the thing. Near the last couple of months prior to stopping, I was getting up there. I was probably having 4 or 5 drinks a night.
That's probably alcoholism.
That is definite alcoholism.
Did your kids,
part of my life necessarily only until recently, but it was kind of a godsend and it woke me up to any amount of it and the need to sort of just go, well, I need a break.
Said that yourself.
I said it myself. And then doing the research, I was listening to the Huberman Lab and stuff like that, who I really dig the way he breaks stuff down medically and psychologically and hormonally, et cetera. But, you know, it was definitely, you know, taking a toll on me. And I kind of was knowing I needed to just take a break and thinking like a year is what I'm after. But
right.
Because that's the neural repair process is about a year. And I don't know. I just feel so good. I'm like, why would I go back?
You look better.
Thank you.
I mean,
yeah,
I've known
had
you
friends
that long,
say that,
but
as
I noticed
well.
You like, just look, you look, I mean, you look good, but you look better.
Yeah. I can see it in people who do it as well. My mom has done it for almost 2 years now. And like you know, she's 74, but her skin looks like she's in her, you know, 50s again.
Yeah.
Like the amount it dehydrates you and, you know, and so there's a lot of benefit for me to stopping completely.
Yeah. But you think that you, because you had so many health issues as a kid.
I know.
That you would have been like, because you were close to death how many times?
Just one time, but that was enough. Yeah. The one time pre-surgery, I mean, I had a 25% chance of surviving it. And, you know, I've never touched cocaine or any hard drugs.
Because that's all heart, man.
Yeah. Like, I remember Lenny Bias. I remember where I was when Lenny Bias was announced.
On the court, right?
Death. No, he died.
No, wasn't there a guy that died on the court?
Yeah, there was Hank. What was
Hank
it?
Gathers.
Hank Gathers, yeah.
Hank Gathers. Pulled that out of my high ass. Still high from yesterday. Jesus.
Right.
But Len Bias.
But Lenny Bias, who would dominate Michael Jordan. He was, you know, in my mind at that time anyway, in college, playing for Maryland versus UNC, he would dominate Jordan. And he was drafted number one and did coke for the first time, supposedly in his life, and died that instantly. And I was like, if this guy who runs sprints for 2 hours dies from it because his heart fails, like, what's a kid with, you know, heart issues, what it would destroy. I know it. I knew it.
So, how old were you when you had your heart surgery?
I was 10.
And you had ventricle?
I had a ventricular septal defect. Yeah, VSD, it's commonly called, which is typical. It's the last part of the heart to form in utero, primarily because it you know, it's the wall between the lower chambers of the heart, which delineates oxygenated from deoxygenated blood. And in utero, there is no difference. You're in amniotic fluid. You're not breathing air. So it's one of the last things to form. And if you're premature, typically it doesn't. And even my daughter, who was premature, you know, she had a small one that closed within a couple months. And
were you scared shitless?
I don't remember being scared. I remember being scared of the IV the morning of.
Oh, I meant your daughter.
When my daughter. No, because I kind of knew, you know, I had enough knowledge on it and I knew that was typical. And, you know, had it been going on for 6 months to a year, I would have been a little more worried. But I knew I knew about it.
So. Yeah. I mean, when you're a kid, how old when you had surgery?
I was 10.
10. Yeah. So you remember it.
I remember it, yeah.
You remember all
I remember waking up in the, I think I woke up in the operating room. Now, whether that was, you know, the drugs I was on, the morphine or what, but I woke up in the operating room and there was a guy standing at the foot of my bed with flowers and a balloon.
What?
And he looked at me and he was like, "You passed with flying colors." Now, clearly that guy didn't exist. They don't allow that guy in the operating room.
Yeah, they don't need some clown coming into your fucking flowers. Surgery room. Yeah, hey, buddy. Hey, can I go in there? I just want to congratulate this kid who almost died. Jesus.
So whether that's guardian angel or morphine dreams I saw it, yeah.
Vividly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's freaky. I thought, you know, maybe they didn't tell you. Maybe you for a second you were
died.
You died,
maybe.
I know
they stop your heart. Well, they put it on a bypass machine.
Oh man, that's got to be the scariest thing for your mom. Was she freaking out? Just
yeah, I think she. You know, she definitely was. Yeah, she was definitely worried.
And how do you? I mean, how does she know? I mean, you talked about this before, right?
Yeah.
It's not like something really new. Yeah. But like when you're young, are you having a lot of issues till that point?
I mean, I had a bunch of things happen from like my brother and I were kidnapped when we were 6.
Yeah, what the fuck was that? Like I read that. I couldn't believe it. And you're aware of it at that age, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was our birth father, but we didn't know him and he was never around. And he, you know, gave us to this woman he was married to and then gave us to her parents. And then like, you know, we moved around so much and then. Whether I wasn't allowed to see a doctor or just didn't, either way, I didn't. And you know, my care was not of utmost concern.
Did he get in trouble?
No,
they didn't even put him away for that.
No.
Cause it's called kidnapping.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, there had to be stuff filed and charges and all this stuff.
And your mom didn't do that.
No, she didn't. And I don't blame her necessarily. And you know, I'm sure there's a lot more to it that I don't even know or understand or that can be reclaimed, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, no. And that's all right.
Was it good times at all? Do you remember?
I remember my brother and I really like, you know, he's 10 months older and we just sort of made our way everywhere we went, you know, and he got a streak of gray hair at like 16.
Oh, man.
From having been my dad for already 10 years at that point. But we bounced around. We were initially in Miami and we would like do all kinds of shit through the streets of Miami and nothing. I mean, we were 6 and 7 years old, nothing crazy, just like.
But you had that freedom to
wandering
do
in the street, coming home to an empty house every day. And like, you know.
You didn't know any better.
No.
Like, this is what it is.
Yeah. And we were like, yeah, whatever. You know, we had fun.
Is he still with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you talk to him?
My brother?
No, your dad.
Oh, I don't know him at all.
You don't know him at all. So once he your mother, you were reunited with your mom.
Yeah.
Right at 10, how 10?
Yeah, 10. Yeah, he sort of disappeared.
And that was it.
He did disappear.
Never came back in your life, even when you had success.
He did. One, you know, when I remember I was going to NYU and internet, at least for me anyway, came to Manhattan around 92, 91, 92. And I remember, I don't even think it was, certainly it wasn't Google back then, but I'd searched him,
right,
found him living in Baltimore, Maryland, had his phone number, called him. He came up to New York for about an hour.
An hour. Was he emotional?
No, he was not at all. And he didn't even really talk about the past. He only talked about, my uncle was a very successful NASCAR driver. And at that time, he was very successful.
That was his brother?
No, my mom's brother.
Your mom's brother.
And he just wanted to talk about him. And, you know.
That's weird.
Yeah,
he's weird. He hasn't seen his son in all these years.
No, and then he showed up on my farm when I was like 32 for about an hour. And I was pissed after that one.
Well, what did he say, talk about this time?
Nothing. He had this, his stepdaughter with him, and like, you know, it was passing through the area and thought, first thing I said, how'd you find me? You know, like in the middle of nowhere, I'm 500 acres in the middle of nowhere, Virginia. And he said, I thought it was, you know, I saw an interview you did or something, and like about the mountains, and like, I was passing through this area and I asked the sheriff, he told me where you lived. I called the sheriff after he left.
What the fuck, like, are you doing, Sheriff?
Exactly.
Well, sorry about that, Skeeter. we get calls all the time like that. Normally,
we direct them right to you.
Well, you think a boy would like to see his pa?
We're gonna, but we're gonna charge you secretarial fees too.
Yeah. So you got pissed.
I internally I was pissed.
Did he ever ask you like, hey, how are you doing? I'm so proud of you. You're doing great.
I don't remember feeling that. You know,
yeah, that's
I don't know. I couldn't tell you what the conversation really was. It was just, my kids were a year old, just over a year
old.
And yeah, they were just walking. The next day we were moving back here to LA from Virginia. Like, the kid's mom happened to be like running errands and wasn't there. It was a weird sort of hour of, you know, I was like, why don't you, you know, I answered the door and Jacob and I are standing beside me. He's like, who are they? After a couple of initial words,
well,
or
that's
whatever.
And I was nobody.
Like, all right, you know, do you want to come in for some water? And he was like, well, I probably won't be staying that long. And I'm like, oh, why did you fucking come here? Like, you know, all the therapy, all the stuff you go through to move past, and then like, dude's gonna show up at your doorstep for an hour. And
you're
like,
fucking my therapy up. I'm fine now without you. And then you just showed up. So that had to have some, I mean, I wonder what therapy was like after he left.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it took me a little while to get back into therapy after that, just from life, kids.
Yeah.
Started my first TV show ever that next couple of months. Which was 90-hour weeks, as you know.
Jesus,
fucking
yeah.
Brutal.
Oh, yeah.
So my life changed over that next couple of years, and then I got into therapy and yeah.
Do you resent him?
I don't really feel much about him, to be honest.
You've gotten to the point where you just don't feel anything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I said to the first therapist analyst I ever went to in my early 20s, you know, as I was really angry and lamenting my childhood and, you know, particularly not having a father and this and that. And I remember, you know, crying to him that like, there's nothing that will ever fix this, nothing, you know? And he said, that may not be true. He said, when you become a father, you will get to relive it from the other side in a way that will be very healing. And man, was he right. I got to do everything I wish I had had.
There it is.
And that was so healing.
Oh my God.
And you know, my kids and I are so tight. It's
I gotta get somebody pregnant. maybe that's the key.
Well, there's this girl that I know that says you did. No.
Oh my God, what?
What?
Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts.
It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your best seller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside. Inside of You is brought to you by Netflix. Battle Creek, Michigan, 1963. Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, race to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A wildly imaginative tale of ambition, betrayal, and menacing milkmen, sweetened with artificial ingredients. Unfrosted stars Jerry Seinfeld in his directorial debut. It features a supporting cast of comedy greats, including Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer, Max Greenfield, Christian Slater, Sarah Cooper, Bill Burr, and many more. Friday, May 3rd, only on Netflix.
No, but it was, and he was not wrong. He was really, really spot on about that. Like, it was very healing.
Because you're becoming the father that he never was to your children. And you're giving them everything he didn't give you, which is so fulfilling and cathartic.
Yeah.
That it's like, that's a beautiful thing. Because it could go the other way. Like, you know, you could, you know, following the footsteps of being like sort of a, you know, I don't want to say deadbeat, but deadbeat dad.
Yeah.
You know?
It would have been easy to do, for sure.
You know?
I shouldn't say that.
And blame.
I have more compassion.
Well, it's because of him. That's why I'm the way I am.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the circle.
Yeah. And you broke it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your kids
and my brother broke it. My brother broke it at the same time. Like he's an unbelievable dad, and he always was from the time he was seven, really. So it's not a shock.
Yeah.
But my niece and nephew he has gone through hell and high water for any whim they have, and not in a spoiling way or a bad way. He's very diligent. You know, he demands hard work from all of us near him.
I bet it's something like, because I what I dealt with was whenever I was sick, whenever something happened, whenever it was never taken seriously. You don't need to go to the doctor. You're fine. You split your lip open. You're bleeding all over the carpet. You're fine. You're, you know, toughen me up. But at the same time, it made me feel like, oh my God, they're not taking care of me.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's probably a part of you that didn't feel like you were being taken care of.
For sure.
You know, when you were kidnapped, you probably got sick and all these things. And you're like, why do I feel like this way? And he doesn't want to help me or take me to the doctor or.
I know.
So even subconsciously. And now, you know, taking care of your kids' health, letting them grow up, be healthy, know you love them unconditionally. You're doing all those things.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
That's pretty crazy. I know you call your stepdad your dad.
Yeah, yeah.
You're tight with him?
Yeah, we're very tight. He's the reason I sit here, to be honest. Coming through a NASCAR family and all racing. And
DK Ulrich.
DK, that was my first stepdad. He's my stepdad now is the one who really sort of, my mom's been with him 34 years, 35. It's been a while. And he's the one that he was worldwide CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi Advertising for a couple decades, like really an advertising genius and guru and had, you know, lived in New York for a long time and had been a part of the arts scene and theater, loved theater and all this stuff. And, you know, my family is very, you know, much about the family business and car racing and this and that. And, you know, and I was going in a very different way. And he vowed to have my back. You know, he was like, you know, when I got in NYU, he paid for it. He bought me an apartment in Gramercy Park. He lived across the street with my mom. My mom moved there when they got married.
So he made the
transition easy. He definitely made some money in advertising and knew how to invest and to, you know, he definitely had done well.
And he was also giving you unconditional love. Like he listened to you, he gave you advice, he helped you, taught you things.
He was. I'll never forget. Like I went to audition for, was it Billy Bathgate that Lauren Dean did with? I think it was.
I remember the movie.
With Nicole Kidman.
Was it Warren Beatty?
I think it was Warren Beatty, potentially.
Right.
But I had an audition. It was like the first audition I ever had. And like, and he read lines with me, like in a restaurant in Manhattan. He was like, and he's reading Nicole Kidman's lines. And he's like, everybody in here thinks I'm like the biggest queen of Manhattan right now, hitting on this young boy. And
oh
like,
my God.
But he's a great,
but you remember
great,
that.
Great man. Oh my God. I'd never forget it.
And you still talk to him constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll see him next week.
That's awesome. Yeah. So your mom, he and your mom were like really supportive of you growing up. And when you got into the acting thing, they supported that. There wasn't like, oh, what are you doing? Why aren't you going into race cars? Why aren't you? I guess race cars, your mom was happy you didn't go into that.
Probably. I think it's, they were really, I couldn't ask for anything more. And, you know, I was so blessed to get the training I got at NYU. Was it intense? It was a lot of work. Yeah. I mean, because it was speech and voice, you know, pre-miking theaters and
the last movement. Seat in the theater needs to hear you.
And you need to buzz it.
Yeah.
And you know, all the work and the scene work and all that stuff. I mean, it was a lot, but yeah, they were so supportive and there for me every step, which was,
that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't, you know, that was, I always say that's a weird thing for me. I always tell, how many times have I told the joke, Ryan, about my dad and Denny's? It was on the thing in the live podcast. No, but he was, I was like, I think I want to be an actor. He's like, eat your steak. That was it. He was like, what are you doing? Steak. You're going to school. You're going to be an actor. Come on. And it never occurred to him until.
That's what I, the until was what I wanted to know.
Until like, I think he saw me in, I think it was probably the biggest thing was, you know, Smallville. I guess, you know, when I did this movie, Urban Legend, he was like, which is like the cheap version of, you know, there was Scream, there was, I don't know what you did last summer, and there's Urban Legend, which I loved Urban Legend. It was great. I loved the director. I loved the movie. But it was like, you know, Scream, I know you did last summer, Urban Legend.
And we all made them on a whim.
Yeah. Like, oh, we never.
Horror was dead. And we were like,
we never knew what was going to happen. And it had, you know, some success. But, you know, I think he was like, huh? You're in a movie? Because I believe that no one ever, not just my father, but nobody, if you asked anybody from where I grew up, Michael Rosenbaum, would he do anything? Everybody would say no. There's even me. Mm-hmm. I would say no. Mm-hmm. But it took like some twists and turns along the way and some people who really supported me and thought I was talented and gifted to go, really, really, really? Okay. And then it just started to slowly happen. But, you know, it's difficult going through life and not having people really just proud of you in general. And so you could just waste away in your mind and go to therapy and all that. But if you don't learn, you know, to love yourself, to do all that stuff like that, and that's taken a long time. I'm still fucking working on that. I get, you know, I get so down, you know, on myself. But along the way, you have people who believe in you.
Yeah.
People who are always there. Yeah. And as long as you have one, you know, and I know there was wasn't there a casting director who really, you know?
There were a lot of people along the way. Yeah. I mean, you know, that, you know, I was fortunate, and it was mainly NYU that sort of catapulted me, you know, into like doing, you know, I was doing plays. You know, I got my first agent who came to see a play, you know, and she was incredible. And Lean Kashishian, who is, you know, she's
Lean Kashishian.
Yeah, she's
say that
amazing.
Three times really fast. Yeah.
So I, you know, I sort of launched out of NYU, and I'll never forget, like, I did an after school special, was the first, you know, thing I ever filmed, the CBS thing, this, you know.
How excited were you?
I was pretty excited. Yeah.
Isn't that something that you're excited for, like, that?
Yeah.
But nowadays it takes so much more to get you excited.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. It's like, you know, I wish I had that spunk, that, you know, lust for life and enjoyment with everything I did when I was younger, when it was all new. And it's like, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that free thing you're doing. Oh, you're doing a spec spot? That's not even real. I'll do it. You know, you need me to do a voiceover, but I'm not getting paid. I'll fucking do it. You know, and then you're like, how long is this? How many hours am I going to work? How much is it? Who's involved? Before it was like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But go ahead, the after school special.
No, I just, you know, it was such a, like, it was an interesting time and to, you know, do something on film for the first time. And, you know, when it aired, my family, my grandfather had a junkyard he's had forever. And my uncles worked there and cousins, and they all, like, got in the RV that was inside of his, you know, one shop in the back and watched it on the TV that was in there. And
everybody, you know, joined in.
Yeah.
Everybody was excited.
Yeah, they were all excited, and, you know, everything just sort of happened. But there were always, you know, I guess, people in the business who believed in me, and you're right. I think that belief is important. I think more important almost is the belief in your love of it, you know, and if you truly, truly love it, the process of creating and filming those things and doing all that, I think you can sustain yourself regardless of outside influence. But that being said, if you don't get that and you're in that in-between spot where you're not really working and yet nobody's really supporting you, I don't know.
Do you love it?
That's a tough one. I do, yeah.
Do you love acting?
I do,
yeah. You love it?
I do.
Like, you wouldn't do anything else?
No, I wouldn't know how to do
it. You'd probably be in a farming and gardening or something.
I mean, I like gardening and I like building stuff, but only to keep my mind occupied when I'm not filming. I'm dying to go back to work. Like,
and you love being on set.
Yeah.
Love the long hours.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Skeet. I love that you could just say you just love it. You love everything about it. That's a rarity. That's like, you know, when people say you love acting, I don't love the work.
Yeah.
I love like sort of, I mean, I, you know, it's that you get something and you get the lines and you're nervous and I can't do it. And then you work on it. And then the excitement slowly comes and then you're on set and you're nervous and then you do it and then you get into it and then it gets more fun. But it's like, it's a process. I'm not like, oh, this is great, 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 fun. I'm like stressed, worried.
That's all a part of it. Absolutely.
And like all the stuff that it involves.
I don't mind it. I mean, I guess, you know, we've both been doing it a long time. After 30 some years of doing it, I'm just used to it. And, you know, learning lines is tedious. It's a lot for me. I know some people, it's like Kristen Ritter. Apparently
we gotta give a shout out to Kristen Ritter.
You know, she would have our throats if we didn't, by the way.
Well, so, we love her to death. Yeah, I mean, she's a dear friend and she introduced me to you and she goes, because you'll love my friend Skeet.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, I like his work. So maybe he's cool too. And we hit it off right away. Yeah, we started laughing and goofing. And I was like, this guy's cool. He plays cornhole. He comes to my house and beats the shit out of me in cornhole in my own fucking backyard.
You were distracted hosting.
Well, I was distracted because you said the cornhole machines were not far enough apart. And that threw me because then we did it and I had to adjust and I wasn't used to that.
I know. You should play at your home distance that you're comfortable
with. No, I want to beat you at your own distance.
Well, it's not my, like, I, you
that's
know,
just the rules. I, well, 25
20,
feet.
27, apparently.
I don't think I have 27 feet.
I know, that's
in my
what
backyard.
I don't think I do either. So I'm like, I don't know if that's going to work.
Yeah. I don't like that you beat me in front of all my friends because I devour my friends.
Well, your friend beat me bad. I can't remember his name. He beat me bad.
Who was that? It wasn't Xander.
No. Name all your friends.
No. Well, I have two. So that's you. Xander and Ryan.
It was Ryan.
It was Ryan right here. Yeah. Where were we, are we talking about Kristen? Yeah, I love, love her. She's got the biggest heart in the world. She's so talented. She's one of those people who, you're right, can just look at something and memorize it. I'm like, fuck you.
I know.
It pisses me off to no end. It's such a gift. If I had that gift to just recollect or just look at something and go, give me 10 minutes. Okay, I got the speech.
Yeah.
And not be that nervous about it.
I know.
I just freak the fuck out.
I know. I've worked with Lawrence Fishburne a couple of times, and he's like that, man. He'll like, boom. He's like, you know, he'll get 8 pages. He was telling me a story, nothing that on what we were working on, but on another thing where, you know, he got 8 pages. And he was like, give me an hour. Win this trailer for an hour. Boom. All right, I'm ready.
Knew it inside out.
Knew it inside out.
Eight pages. That's what scares me, I think. If somebody told me, hey, we're doing this movie, the lines are as is, you don't have to worry about, we're not changing shit on you, we're going to shoot, I'd be like, fuck yeah. Right away, I'd feel better.
Well, that's
about
the difference. In, yeah.
I don't like being like thrown stuff that I, you know.
Especially when you're doing accents and a very particular characterization, because there's a cadence and a rhythm that is so important. And it's, you know, a lot of the rewriting internally on your own dime and time is gearing it towards this sound, you know, and then you're handed this thing like, well, we're going to cut that part and then add, you know, add this thing in there. And you're like, oh man. Well,
yeah.
You know, and you can, I mean, once you're in rhythm, you're in rhythm. And I think that's what happened for Fish was like, you know, he's in the middle of this thing and it's not like it's going to go 180 degrees in an opposite direction. He's been prepping this character. He knows this dude. So it's like, oh yeah, all right, well, we're going to do blah, blah, blah. All right, we'll add that and blah, blah, blah. And boom, there it is. You know, it's kind of in flow.
I agree.
But
it's one of those things where I like to play. I like, if I know my shit, I'm not thinking about my lines.
Yeah.
I could talk to you and then action and boom, and we're playing and I'm picking up this glass and I'm like going, you know, I don't give a shit because this is what people do.
Yeah.
But when I'm thinking of the lines the whole time, I can't, I'm just fucking, I just want to get them out.
Yeah.
And it's fucking stressful.
I agree.
You know, I know you're trained, you did a lot of plays. I did a lot of plays, but a lot of actors are like, I just always wanted to do theater. I just wanted to always be in the theater. And I'm like, really? You don't want to do movies and work with big actors and be famous and make lots of money. You just want to do theater. So what's the honest answer of that? Would you go back and do theater? Or is that something that was a part of your life and you loved it, but you don't really have interest in going back?
I'm not necessarily compelled towards it. I did enjoy it. I don't think I was ready in a way for it that I am now. But I also wonder if I have the capacity to remember that much dialogue now after so many years of movies and, you know, stuff like that. And I'm starting to dabble with it. My daughter and I are memorizing scenes from Proof, you know, just to stay in practice of memorizing
just random
stuff.
Shit.
Yeah.
That's smart, man. I want to do that. Ryan, will you memorize scenes with me?
He's like, I don't got to memorize anything. I'll read it right here.
He doesn't have a mic, so he can't. You know, we got to fix that. We got to get you a mic.
You do.
We got to work on
that. You
need
a side mic.
Yeah, it's over there. You want to go get on your knees over here? This is the mic.
Whoa.
No, that didn't. That's not what I meant.
Oh, wait, you have visual with this. Okay.
That's not what I meant. Okay. No, the mic is on the fuck it. Forget it. You have to watch this to see what we're talking about.
We'll add you in later.
Yeah. Do you ever get starstruck?
You know, I never have, oddly.
Not with one person.
No, and I.
Good for you.
I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking in work environments, though. I think outside of work, I probably have been.
Like who?
I don't know. I met Brad Pitt a couple times, and he's super nice dude.
He is. I met him once. Cool.
But I was a little starstruck by him.
Yeah.
There's a little vibe about him that's like.
Oh, cooler than cool.
Cool. Yeah. I want him to like me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I think there's that.
Yeah.
I was never the cool guy. So it's like when you're hanging out with a cool guy, it's like, hey, I'm hanging out with a cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
Exactly. But I mean, in terms of work, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I worked early with a lot of like really big name people and like from Nicholson. To,
oh yeah.
You know, Chris Walken, you know, Sharon Stone at her height.
Was Nicholson cool?
the coolest.
He wasn't that. Were you starstruck from him?
No, I wasn't. But I was focused on the work.
Did he talk to you like on the outside?
We had scenes that were cut out of that movie that were really funny that he and I had. And
did you ever get those scenes?
I did.
You did.
I only about 6 weeks ago digitized them, and first time I've seen them.
Awesome.
They're wild. I do not see it in the movie.
What happens in the scene?
Well, the initial ending was them coming to, and you know, to the gist of my part in the movie is I get, you know, Greg Kinnear beat up trying.
You're
to
a transvestite
rob his
or
place.
Something, or
no? Gay? I was a street hustler.
Oh, you're a street hustler
in New York.
It's been so long.
And I, you know, have this relationship that develops. He's painting me, but more develops, and then I get him rolled. You know, allow my friends to come in, Jamie Kennedy being one of them.
Yeah.
And anyway, the initial ending was them coming out onto the street, and they send Jack out to ask me for a blowjob to lure me back to the car to apprehend me, which happens. And that's this one scene. And
well, I was wondering if you give me a beejer.
It was kind of, he was like, I'd like to purchase a blowjob.
Is that what he said?
And then
like
that's
to
the
purchase
line.
A blowjob.
Yeah. But he was amazing. He was, you know, he was really incredible. And Faye Dunaway, I worked
with. Was she a monster? Because I hear monster.
She was not on our, you know, this was Kevin Spacey's directorial debut. And it was, she was the only female in the cast.
And she was cool.
She was very cool.
Was she late?
I don't remember her being late, but she took, you know, it took hours of makeup and,
yeah,
you know, and she's a, you know, an old school pro walking her marks with a mirror, checking the lighting, like, you know.
Did she ever talk about Betty Davis, how she hated her?
I don't
Did she ever
remember
bring that
her
up?
They loathed each other. I do remember that now that you
do
mentioned
remember?
That, but.
But he's like, well, she's completely unprofessional. That's so cool. I mean, getting to work with all these actors at a young age.
Yeah, I think,
so.
You know, fortunately I was focused on, you know, the work and like mm-hmm. not, you know, not getting sort of starstruck by them. And now in hindsight, I'm like, I look back and I'm like, oh man, I got to work with some really, really cool movie stars.
Yeah.
You know,
that's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And I have too. I'm like, I look at him like I worked with Clint. He directed my first movie.
Yeah.
You know, that was awesome.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, Forrest Whitaker. I had a scene with Forrest Whitaker. I'm like, holy shit, man. This
he's
is dope. Bruce
ever.
Campbell, Evil Dead movie. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, so it's just like even, it's just amazing. Sometimes you really have to, it's important to sort of look at everything from the outside in.
Yeah.
And just take a deep breath and go, hey, man, this is cool.
Yeah, the gratitude is big.
Do you say your gratitudes? Do you?
I don't. I feel them in general. You know, I've definitely gone through over the last year, you know, of trying to instill a gratitude practice, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah.
But I feel like, and now especially not drinking, like it just happens naturally. I don't journal it or like, you know, but I note things in the day and take a general sense of goodness from them.
Yeah, I feel like you're that. I feel like you're one of the most present guys I know.
Oh,
just because, like, I look at, like, you show me pictures of your garden and what you're planning and doing work on the house and your kids and your, and it just seems like, you know, you don't wait for work. I mean, you obviously wait for it, but while you're waiting in the interim, you are living your life the best you can and doing fun things and taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Which you just stopped drinking, which is, you know.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Where do I stand in this world of actors, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of talented people out here. You being one of them, they're everywhere. Everywhere you go, there's like, you know, and there's a lot of talent. I remember an interviewer asking me after As Good As It Gets, because we started filming on the streets of New York and wound up, you know, ending out here in studio work, stage work and stuff like that. And asking what the difference was of working in New York and LA. And I was like, well, in New York, you know, you're on the street doing scenes and you feel like any number of people that walk by are probably better actors than you are.
Yeah. There's so many better actors.
And
yeah.
In LA, everybody who walks by is definitely better looking than you are.
Oh my God. Like, I can attest to that.
That was the big difference for me in the two. But yeah, you start to really go, I wonder where I stand in terms of just the brass tacks abilities, you know?
Yeah.
To process 60 pages of dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, can I still do that? I don't know. So
every week, if you do a show.
Yeah.
Every week you have to, can you do 40, 50 pages? I don't think I could. I think if
I can handle it in TV. I don't know. I mean, like a play is the one I'm really, and you're right.
You have 4 to 6 weeks to rehearse it. So you're doing the same lines for 4 to 6 weeks. So you're like learning a script pretty much. So I think you could do it. But if you're doing a TV show and it's 7 days of like doing 50 pages and then the next day they're starting the next episode.
Yeah, it is a lot.
That is
it's two
stressful.
Hours, 2 to 3 hours every night of learning lines. I remember headlining shows that like,
Jesus, man.
Just like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
And then you're rewriting as you go. And,
yeah. Fuck that. You know. Did you ever, because you had to have gotten compared a little bit when you were younger to Johnny Depp. You've heard that shit.
Yeah.
Did you hate that?
I felt like it took away from a little bit of what I was doing.
Yeah, of course.
You know, like that it sort of overshadowed what I felt like was good work that, you know, and it didn't completely take away from it, but I mean, in my mind, like it just,
like, I don't want to be like someone else.
Yeah.
You know, and you weren't at all.
No,
but I think you were just so hunky.
And I don't know, but it was a bit frustrating for sure. And I could see here and there resemblances and stuff, but it's not like, it didn't seem like it needed that much press time.
You know what it was? It was that he did this horror movie where he was the kind of guy.
Nightmare.
And then you did, another Wes Craven movie and you were the guy, but the difference is he was innocent and got murdered and you were this fucking killer.
My part was bigger.
Your part was bigger and better and stronger.
Wes liked me more.
And you got to go nuts, you know? And I worked with Wes on a movie that, you know, never was seen. I mean, but I got
Which
to work.
One?
It was a movie called Cursed, but he just sent me a letter and
I
said,
was in Cursed.
Well, they fired everybody off the first movie because
they didn't fire me. I quit. But
you quit. Yeah. And then they reshot it. And
but we shot all but the last 3 weeks of that movie. We shot for nearly 3 months.
And then they canned it.
Well, Miramax stopped it to rewrite it, paid us all to wait 2 months for the rewrites. And then we had options out. And it was.
And you left.
I left.
You're like,
it was
this
not
is not
a great experience.
Like, no. Well, I knew.
Not because of Wes. It just was not going well. And I don't think the script was, you know, quite where it needed to be or what really. It was meant to be.
I know.
But they spent a lot of money on that movie and then decide, you know, we had Hollywood Boulevard shut down for a night from like, I don't know, Highland to like La Brea, that whole stretch where Ripley's is and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could turn all the lights off for this finale thing. I mean, like they spent a lot
and
of
Christina
money.
And Christina Ricci did the first and like she was. So when I got there, I didn't realize that, but Wes sent me a letter that I still have. And he was just like, telling me, I love your work and I'd love you to be in this movie. And just like,
And I
looked at it and I was like, it's such a small part. I'm going to go uncredited, but I want to work with Wes. So I just went uncredited in the movie.
Yeah.
And I did it. And I just felt like everybody there didn't really want to be there.
Yeah. It was a weird vibe.
It was a weird vibe, but Wes was so cool. He would say, all right, do a take now, like walking, do a take like Malkovich, do a take like just fucking and having fun.
So
I had fun with him.
Yeah.
He was a dream, but I felt like, and I it felt bad because I was like, man, Christina Ricci doesn't like me.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
She doesn't like me. And then I realized, no, she doesn't want to be here.
Yeah.
She's like doing this movie again.
Yeah.
And so later on, I met her years later and she was so sweet and cool. And it was just like, I was nervous. I was like, I'm in this big studio film and I'm like trying to do my thing. And I had to wear a fucking bad wig because I was bald. And it was an experience.
It was an interesting one. Yeah. That's, I didn't realize, because I, once I sort of jump ship on that. I never really looked back. To,
yeah. Yeah.
You never sought it out.
Yeah. Why would you do that? Well, yeah. I only wonder what's up with that movie. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. How did Joshua Jackson really do it?
Yeah. You know, with the big Wes Craven movie you did, was it something that you've asked this, but you knew you had to keep secret what could happen so you could learn all your dialogue?
Well, we had this was pre-spoiler worries and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, but they kept it a secret.
The whole thing from the moment they let it out.
I auditioned for it.
You had the script
for Lillard's part, but it was sides.
Oh, okay.
I don't think
okay.
I had the script. I had sides.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I got the full script, and I remember getting the part, and I had to do press for another movie I'd done, and I was doing an interview with Interview Magazine. And they were asking me what was coming up. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to play this serial killer in this movie and blah, blah, blah. And that, yeah, exactly. And then I hung up the phone call and I was like, oh. And I called my publicist right away. And I was like,
you can't air
blah,
that.
Blah, 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 blah.
And they
blah,
didn't,
blah,
right?
And yeah. And they were able to
oh, my gosh, my heart stopped.
I know.
They would have killed you.
I know. Imagine.
Could you imagine if everybody knew the ending?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So fortunately...
Jesus.
There were some
but
kindness.
But you obviously became friends with a lot of these guys. I mean, you didn't really.
I did. Yeah. I mean, I it wasn't long after that I moved to Virginia, though. So I don't know. Friendships in this business are hard to maintain because, you know, we're all going different directions all year long. And so you can spend I remember I did a movie with Tobey Maguire. We played best friends for 7 months for Ang Lee.
And that was it, though.
And yeah, and that was it. I had a farm in Virginia. He came back here and we see each other and it's like, you know,
hey!
Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
But you just don't feel like the need to hang out.
But it wasn't that weird. You know, he was going that direction. Yeah. I was going that direction. We were busy doing this. And then the next friendship happens through 7 months of filming or now you don't really shoot movies for 7 months unless you're, doing.
And Lord movie.
Yeah, exactly. It has to have a Lord in the title.
As the Lord. Lord.
But you know what I mean? It's hard to maintain friendships in this profession.
Yeah. Unless you just vibe with someone, you enjoy being around them and their schedules are permitting to where you can see them and go, oh, that's, you know.
That's the great thing, right, about a film career is, you know, you can do 2-3 movies a year and still wind up with 3 months of downtime to hang, to do, you know, do other things.
Yeah.
It's just a different walk.
It is.
World.
Yeah. You surround yourself, I feel like, with good people though. Like I met Dermot Mulroney through you know, and he just immediately made me laugh.
Yeah.
Just such a fun guy to be around.
You know, he was so, and I have not known him that long, but we were shooting Scream 6 in Montreal. I had all of a couple of hours of work on set. So I wasn't on there that much, but I finished. And then we had a cast and producers dinner on the Saturday. And then we had a press shoot the Sunday. And we had dinner together and I mean, amongst a bunch of people, but we sat beside each other and just chatted. He's from Virginia. I'm from Virginia. We just, you know, we had the same agent, you know, we just had a lot to talk about this and that. And then, had a great couple hours, whatever. And then the next morning going to that publicity shoot, I tested positive for COVID. And I had to go to New Orleans shortly. I had to fly home to LA. You know, the next day, the Monday morning, I had a week at home and then I was off to New Orleans for 5 months. And so I tested positive and, you know, Paramount had a policy or whoever had a policy that, that, you know, you couldn't fly until you tested negative.
Right.
And he called me. Dermot did and was like, you know, oh man, I heard you tested positive. I'm at the pharmacy, you know, at CVS, you know, I'm going to get you some stuff.
Wow.
I'll get you some Gatorade and some of this and all this for your symptoms. You know how you did. Checked on me, everything. I literally spent 2 hours talking to him and he took care of me. And he was like, wow. I know you need to get home. I know you want to see your kids before you go away for a little while. He, for some reason, had my back and, you know, and was there for me in a way nobody else. And it's not like I knew it. I'm not.
He just went out of his way.
He just went out of my way to be out of his way to be friendly and like, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, this is a good
dude. That doesn't exist really. You don't really see that. So you were like, I want to hang out with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it feels like when you guys are together, you're like the best of friends.
I know. And it's really crazy, not been that long. And I, you know, I was like, you should do this, you know, these signing conventions and stuff like that. And like, and he's, you know, he has thanked me up and down and left and right for turning him on to that stuff. And, you know, it takes a real onus off of some of the year to make a little bit of money on the side.
Yeah. And make fans happy.
And make fans
happy.
Do
you enjoy the cons?
I enjoy the exchange. Yeah. You know, it's exhausting.
It is, because you want to give everybody everything you
have. Yeah. I feel like, you know, and you know, I mean, like, we've been in this business so long. You used to crave somebody to ask you for your autograph or to want to take a picture with you.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, it used to be like a, you know, so I would, and to this day I would, you know, if somebody on the street, whatever, wants, yeah, absolutely, yep, whatever, sign this. But now people are paying for it. So I feel like I owe them, you know, not only what they paid for, but the experience, you know, moments or something.
Yeah.
And Matt Lillard's really, really good at this stuff and taught me a lot about sharing gratitude, about how, you know, he, as he says it, he can change a kid's life.
We
with
all
one
can.
Sentence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one, I see you and I see what you're going through. And that's it. And, you know, and he's right. And, you know, so I, there's a lot I get out of it and there's a lot I give out of it, if you will.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's very rewarding. Yeah.
I give everybody that moment. And when someone needs to talk to me and say, and I could see the tears in their eyes, I immediately just zone in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I can't just let them go without knowing that, hey, I hear you and
absolutely,
you got this. I just can't. I can't just be like, thanks so much. You know what I mean?
And if you ever needed any validation that art has a valuable place in society, go to one of these, because there are any number of people who will tell you how much you helped them through a hard time.
Yeah.
How you were, you know, and this is just a piece of art that you created, you know, but that it takes on a whole nother life to people. And so I think there's real value and societal value in art, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one who thinks that.
No.
But I'm reminded of it, you know, as we do those things.
Hey, if somebody wanted to do like a Jericho reunion, because people love that show.
They do.
They do. And it only lasted a couple years.
Yeah.
And people like, would you consider it if it was a good script or a one out TV movie or something?
Yeah. I mean, I would. Absolutely. That was such a special group of people and you know, and such a great show to be a part of and story to tell. And there was so much left to tell and it was just at the wrong network, unfortunately. But yeah, I would definitely, I mean, Netflix tried to buy it about, God, it was as much as like 10 years after it aired. So like 7-8 years ago now. And
wow,
they wouldn't sell it, unfortunately, but it got to the point they thought they were going to sell it. Netflix did. So it got to like, you know, schedules and locations and all this stuff. It got, you know, up in the pre-production part of it. And then CBS balked. But part of the discussion when they asked, like, would you come back? I was like, well, I will if, you know, if we agree on where the story start point is.
Mm.
And the story start point for me or in my mind was, you know, 5 years later and we had devolved even further than you could imagine. And we're now like really kind of living under the town and like being able to filter, you know, so
yeah,
really started a lower level rather than we've really figured out society,
been cool.
You know, and like
they have somewhere to go. Back. Yeah.
So, and they were into that idea and, you know, stuff like that, but we just, yeah, never happened.
Would you do another one of the Screams?
I'd probably do another one, but you know, that was only because of the way they sort of talked about, you know, coming back. But I think that would probably be about it.
One more.
Yeah.
That'd be it.
I mean, it's literally like, it's not a lot of work. You know? I like it because it does. I think it's cool that they really want to harken back to the beginnings of it.
And it's cool for the fans.
Yeah,
and it's cool for,
I like the, like the line that they're thinking about, you know, of taking it. And but yeah, I mean, yeah, I've kind of, it's kind of run its course.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay, Brian Ray Trout. Does anybody ever, does your mom call you Brian still?
No, no one does.
No one at
all? My grandfather did, but he passed a while ago. Yeah, no one. No one.
Zero. You haven't heard Brian in you don't even
look. I mean, only because my license says it. So maybe at like the DMV.
Yeah.
And Brian, get up here.
And I love that your little league coach came up with that, because you were kind of a scrawny little kid, but you're fast as shit.
Yeah.
And so he's like, Skeeter.
Skeeter. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, I'm a Skeeter.
Does anybody call you Skeeter?
Maybe when people first meet me, or I have a friend I've known for a while. She'll call me Skeeter Bug.
Does anybody ever say, oh, skeet, skeet, motherfucker?
Oh, yeah.
Do you hate it?
No, I mean, you know, he wrote that song.
Look at Ryan shaking his head. I had to say it.
We were hanging out a lot in that time when he wrote that song.
Really? Yeah, who was that?
Me and Little John, you know, we were really good buddies.
Little John?
And I was like sleeping with all these women, and it just became a thing he'd say, you know.
You're such a liar. I was buying it. I was like, Jesus. I was like, wait a minute. That's, no, he's lying. Do you, lastly, do you deal with anxiety at all? Do you go to therapy? What do you do about it?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I've sort of peeled one of the masks for anxiety off in alcohol and, you know, and so, ironically, you know, in doing so, I have less anxiety because of the way alcohol works in your system anyway. I had gone to therapy, you know, off and on, and even up until a little more than a year ago. And I went away to New Orleans to film and just haven't gone back since, which is like a year now. So
you probably go back, won't you?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I get something from it, but I'm, you know, I haven't been in a relationship in a while. And I think that's usually,
that usually a reason for therapy.
Yeah.
Living alone is also the cause for therapy. You get really lonely.
Yeah, that happens.
I'm so lonely.
Do you get lonely here?
You know what it is? I have such great friends and, you know, people in my life. I got the wonderful dogs, but like, you know, I still battle with, you know, me.
Yeah.
I get in the way of me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why are you so hard on yourself? Or why do you continue to do that when you know you shouldn't do that? Or what?
Yeah.
And then you get sort of, you know, so sometimes it's like, dude, just fucking stop then. You know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
So I get mad at myself. But, you know, just talking to someone, whether it's about something will evolve in the conversation.
Yeah.
And it will go, oh, I'm glad I talked to them. Even though I feel like I have nothing to talk about, I'm like, I'm glad I just feel better. I just feel better. So that's cool. Well, I'm glad you stopped drinking.
Yeah.
You could always hang out with me. I'm not a drinker.
I know.
So we can cornhole it up.
Perfect. Perfect.
I'm going to get some practice in first, my brother.
You don't need it. You know how cornhole is like bowling. You know, like sometimes you bowl upper 100s, or for me anyway, you may be consistently there. And sometimes, like I'm talking like 160, I think is the highest ever. And sometimes I bowl like 80. So cornhole is kind of the same. Sometimes you're like just
most of the time
hitting him. I don't know. Sometimes, I mean, but you know, unlike you, I have been beat many times.
We should have a cornhole tournament one day.
We should air it.
Six teams.
Ooh.
I'll have a videographer come in and do it and just get highlights and fucking put it together. It'd be hilarious.
Ooh, I like this idea.
Cornhole tournament.
Yeah, I'm down.
Who would be down for that? Dermot for sure.
Dermot, Jamie, Lillard.
You.
Me. Me.
Oh, my friend Ethan for sure. Ryan's in. Oh, we have enough.
We'll be fine. We'll make it work.
We name six teams until people are like, dude, we don't need to hear every fucking name.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a real treat, dude. I told you this.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Thanks for having
me. Did you have fun?
I had a great time. I love what you do. And
thanks, buddy.
I think this is really cool. I don't do many podcasts, so it's.
I know you don't.
Yeah.
So I was fun. I said it once. I think you said it when we were in
I probably did.
Somewhere you're just like, I'll do your podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I don't listen to them much, and I'm not a 100% aware of all the, but obviously they've, a lot of people are really into them and there's a lot of value in them. And
yeah.
I'm just now starting to, you know, with the Huberman Lab and different stuff, seeing, oh, wow, there's a lot of information that's out there that I was unaware of.
And yeah. Well, I'm glad you did it, dude. And people will, you'll see how many more people, follow you, and because opened up a little bit, you talked about some personal things, and people love that. And you know, talking about mental health and just dealing with life, and you know, it's cool. So
Well, thank you, man.
All right, man.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Skeet, you're the shit. I love you. This is a lot of fun, and another shout out to Kristen Ritter. Not that she needs it, but I love you, woman. Thank you for getting me Skeet on the podcast, introducing us. You are an amazing woman, and she was an amazing guest too. So you need to listen to that episode if you haven't listened to it. And if you fast forward it, listen to the beginning. Go to my Instagram, Linktree, all the events, things coming up, live pods, cons, cameos, all that stuff is there. And I really appreciate it. Ryan, you still going to therapy?
I am still going to therapy.
Good.
I
am too.
My work mandate. No, it's been going well because I've got a new therapist this year, and it's been good to have different kinds of conversations, basically about the same things, but just having like a different perspective.
It is. Yeah. BetterHelp Online Therapy. They've been a sponsor for a long time, and it's helped a lot of people. And I urge you to get therapy. I do it. It helps me immensely. If I didn't do it, I think I would be just more all over the place. And it grounds me. It makes me think about things. It makes me understand. It connects the dots to sort of my childhood to now, why we react to certain things. What, you know, it's so much more than people think. Oh, if you're just dealing with a lot of trauma, that you should get therapy. That's not true at all. It's like you want to work on yourself so you don't get to a point where it's traumatic and you're so far down a rabbit hole or whatever of anxiety and depression or whatever you're dealing with. And I love therapy, and I will continue to do it for as long as I live. If you're wondering why my shirt is different, it's because this was edited. So there you go. We're going to do the shout outs now. Top tier patrons, patreon.com/insideofyou. Without you guys, I couldn't do the show, and you mean the world to me. So thank you for always supporting the show. And here we go. Patreon.com/insideofyou. You get shout outs. You get boxes sent from me. You get Zooms. There's all sorts of fun stuff. So become a patron now. Nancy D. Leah and Kristen, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E., Brian H., Nico P., and Zach, Robert B., Jason Dreamweaver, Sophie M., Raj C., Jennifer N., Stacey L., Jamal F., Janelle B., Mikey L. Dan Supremo, where are you, Dan? I haven't talked to you in a while. Jeez, 99 more. Santiago M.'s always hanging around. Leanne P., Maddie S., Belinda Narlisle. Belinda N, Dave H, Brad D, Ray Hadada, Tabitha T, Tom N, Talia M, Betsy D, Rhiannon C, Corey K, Ryan,
Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Jeremy C, Mr. M, Eugenia Leah, Mel S, Chris S, Eric H, Oracle, Amanda R, Kevin E, Stephanie K, Jor-El, Jam J, Leanne J, Luna R, Mike F, Stone H, Brian L, Jules M, Jessica B, Kyle F,
Kaylee J, Charlene A, Brian A, Marion Louise L. Always love hearing her name. Romeo the Band, Frank B, Jen T, April R M, Randy S. And we can't forget Rachel D, or Jen the Carolina Girl. Lorelai L, Nick W, Stephanie and Evan, Stevan. Charlene A, Don G, Jenny B, John, Jennifer R. Tina E, N G, Tracy, Tasha S. Some are Tasha, but it's Tasha. But some people like to be known as Tasha. But it's Tasha S. Keith B. Waffles. Heather and Greg. Ellie K. Elizabeth L. Ben B. And Pierre C. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you. Thanks for listening to the podcast. From the Hollywood Hills in Hollywood, California, I'm Michael Rosenbaum.
I'm Ryan Tayes. I'm here as well.
Yeah, we'll wave to the camera. We love you. Be good to yourself. I'll see you next week.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.